You shared something with me last Sunday. Do you remember that as you were going out? So I want you to share that with us first, and then we'll get into our lesson today.
Sometimes it's just good to listen to the kids first before we start just trying to, you know, just start off teaching them something from the Bible. Because most times kids have something that they are thinking about or that they are going through or that's on their mind that's affecting them at that point in time. So it would be more effective to address that area or that issue at that time than just taking something which is just randomly out of the Bible and trying to teach them that. Uh-huh. Is it? I mean, recently one of my kids came home. She said that, oh, yeah, Daddy, tomorrow we're going to wear a blue T-shirt. I'm like, okay, blue T-shirt to school, right? I'm like, blue T-shirt. And then I started asking her, blue T-shirt, why? She said, because we are learning about bullying in school. And that was something that was on her mind. I know that they are already learning in school that they're going to be, you know, talking about that day. And that's a good area, that, you know, topic that I can address that issue at that time from the Bible instead of maybe taking another topic like, you know, how God created the world or something, which is relevant, but maybe at a different point in time, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's one good thing we can keep in mind.
We should be ready to talk to our kids about what they're thinking. And if you don't know, just there are ways, asking questions, being around. If a child comes out with something, you really do want to pay attention to that and not ignore it. You ever catch yourself where your kid says something to you and then you realize later they were saying something to you and you said, oh, yeah, that's good. But you never talked about it and it was sitting right there. And that is a perfect thing to think in terms of as far as having conversations with our kids. Hard thing about that is it happens unexpectedly. And that's where we have to be paying attention. Well, today I want to introduce some things and use these things as points for more focused discussion in future Sundays. We'll introduce some ideas. And then these things will, some of them, become individual topics later. And I want to talk about this matter of preventing anger and frustration. This is a very convicting little thing, but it is important, and we need to take a look at it. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4 says, this really comes right after telling kids to obey their parents. So let me say this. You know how you tell a wife from Scripture, submit to your husband? Oh, but husbands love your wife. You always have to make sure. This is a two-way proposition. If we're going to ask wives to submit, you also need to doubly emphasize that husbands need to be loving. This isn't just one way. We forget that with parenting, though. Because Paul says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And fathers, don't provoke them to wrath. Again, this is a two-way situation. This is not a one-way thing. If a wife looks at her husband and he says, just obey me, I'm the husband. Well, I mean, that's kind of true, kind of. But that's not the full picture, right? But how many times do we look at our kids and say, kid, you have to obey me, I'm the parent. Well, yeah, that's kind of true. But what about this? Parents, don't provoke your children. This is not irrelevant. It actually appears again in Colossians chapter 3, verse 21. Fathers, provoke not your children, lest they become discouraged. It's a little different in its wording. But this is the idea. That first verse in Ephesians 6 talks about anger, not causing your child to become angry. Angry. Very strong anger. The second passage is not the same word. It looks the same in English, at least some translations, but it's actually a different word. And that one refers to exasperation, more of a bitterness kind of idea. That's what that's talking about. There's similar ideas, but they're not the same. And then it adds to that, lest they become discouraged. And that's just kind of losing heart. Just giving up is the idea. Maybe they're not yelling at you and punching holes in the wall, but they've given up. And you can tell they're tired of this, whatever it is. And so parents have to be aware of that. Now, you may have heard, and I've been really looking at this, not because I'm trying to get out of anything, but Paul says, fathers, and you've heard pastors perhaps at times, or speakers or teachers say, it's interesting that it doesn't mention the mother here, and so evidently mothers don't have a problem with this, but fathers have a problem with this, and so God singles out fathers to make sure that they don't frustrate their children. I did a little digging, and I was asking questions like, does this word always refer to fathers? Does it ever refer to mothers? Is there any chance in the world that mothers could actually also frustrate their kids? Because sometimes we can overstate one thing and miss another side to it. And so that's what I was looking at. And you can maybe do this in your own personal time and give it some thought. But it's interesting, the same concept, raising up your children. Children, it says, fathers, don't provoke, but raise up. Again, now Colossians, fathers, don't provoke. But this idea of raising up, that word, raise up, child train, is that just the father's job? I don't think we would say that. Actually, if you look at 1 Timothy 5:10, we can really say that, because in that passage, Paul is talking to Timothy, and he actually says, widows in a church, that a church should take serious care of in their old age, really need to be ladies who raised their children well. Oh, so it actually does matter how a lady raises her children, I guess. She can't say, oh, well, my husband, no, because she also has shared mutual responsibility in child raising. It's expected by the deacons of the church. If they're going to really put some money behind caring for you as a widow in the church, they need to see that you have a testimony of raising your children well. Same word. Also, this is very fascinating to me. In Hebrews chapter 11, in verse 23, the writer of Hebrews uses the word for fathers, the same word in Ephesians and Colossians here. It's not the generic word for parents. It's the word fathers. And the Greek actually says this in Hebrews 11, 23. It says, Moses' fathers hid him for 3 months. Moses' fathers. So you turn back to Exodus, and you look in Exodus. You look in chapter, is it 2? Yes. Verses 1 through 3. And it says that this man married this lady, and they had a child named Moses. And Pharaoh said, kill all the baby children, all the baby boys. And Moses' mother hid him for 3 months. Hebrew says fathers, plural. Exodus says his mother, and we know his sister was involved too. So what are we supposed to make of this? Is there an error in Hebrews? Did it get the story wrong? No. What it shows us is that the word fathers can actually be used to refer to the parents. Even though it was the mother technically who did this to him, the father, whether he was involved or not, I don't know. I assume that he knew what was going on in his house. It's his baby. The mother was very involved in making this happen. The father, at the least, also consented and was totally knowledgeable about his son being hidden and not complying to Pharaoh. Even though the mother apparently was the driving impetus behind this, it was the fathers, plural, who did it. It's another way of referring to parents. And even though the mother is singled out in Exodus, it actually had something to do with fatherly oversight. And I think if you look at this, you just really understand that parents, mother and father, share mutual responsibility. However, why would Paul not use the regular word for parents, the generic word for parents? He could have easily done that. I think there's a good answer to that. I think the answer is, it is a mutual responsibility, which means you can't just say, mothers don't have a problem with this, but men do, so now we're going to single out the men. I think the better point is, mothers and fathers, as the fathers, the parents, have a shared responsibility in raising their children, making sure they're not frustrated and angry. But at the end of the day, it is the fathers that need to take responsibility for what's happening in the home. A man cannot look at his children and say, man, they're frustrated and angry kids. And, you know, I'm a good dad, but my wife, she just frustrates them. You can't do that. You as the father have to work together with your wife as parents without blaming her for the shortcomings, even though she does share in the development process and could actually cause frustration herself and your children. Does that make sense? So I'm not comfortable saying this is only for fathers. Ladies, turn your ears closed. I think mothers and fathers both have to feel the mutual obligation to raise their children well. Both need to understand that both of you can cause frustration and anger in your kids. But fathers need to take responsibility for whatever's happening there. And even helping your wife understand, I think we're kind of, it's not working right. I fail at this, you need to work at this, and working with the kid. The fathers can't just watch their wife and have nothing to say and then blame. You can't do that. Does that make sense? Any questions about that? Okay. So, there is this possibility of anger or frustration that can develop as we parent or don't parent our children. Not all, very important, not all bad feelings are the result of bad parenting. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. There is sin embedded in every kid's heart, and you should not take personal responsibility in a guilt-ridden way for every outburst and bad feeling your child has. But you should always ask the question, have I caused this in any way? That is a good question. Sometimes the answer is, yes, I have something to do with this. Sometimes you just say, no, this kid has a problem. I don't know what it is, but we have to work on this. But you do have to consider the possibility that you may have caused this. Which is why at the end of the lesson, I've asked you the question to think about, as you were raised as a child, apart from your own personal issues that you would have had no matter who was your parent, you know yourself, were there any things about how you were raised that caused anger or bitterness or frustration? Because your kids are growing up now, and they're not self-analyzing themselves right now. They're not self-aware like this, but it's just a helpful exercise to go through. What did my parents do that frustrated me? And what I have to be careful of is in my parenting teaching that I don't stand up here and just tell you my experience. That I don't just tell you the good things my parents did, so you should do it, the bad things my parents did, so you shouldn't do it. Like, I'm trying to help us all correct our lives the way I need to work in my... No, that's not good. What I want to do here is I want to walk through some biblical things that the Bible teaches, whether I experienced it or not, you experienced it or not, and just be objective and say, according to the Bible, these are some things that legitimately could cause your kids frustration and anger. Okay? So let's go through these. These will be more talking points later on in depth. Number one, I want to show you why I think these are biblical. I didn't sit down and read a parenting book from some organization and just go through some pop psychology parenting techniques. I think I can show you that these are biblical things. A broken marriage can cause anger and frustration in a child's heart. Broken as in divorce. I've heard parents say, maybe we should just divorce, that way our kids won't see us arguing all the time. What? No, actually, you're going to add to the problem. Because when you break that marriage up, you actually increase potential for anger and frustration. You actually do. The only real solution is to work out why you get angry with each other. Divorce is not a solution. Why do I say that? Well, biblically, all of these instructions, don't provoke your children, come right out of an in-depth conversation about husbands and wives' relationships to each other. That's the backdrop for these commands. Behind successful parenting are healthy marriages. Okay? Very important. When a wife will not respect and will not meet the needs of her husband, let me just add this as I do talk to people and minister. Wives need to learn to meet the needs of their husband. Don't overcomplicate that. It's a very simple thing, and it will go a very long way towards revolutionizing your husband. I can tell you that. I can tell you that. I can tell you that. Just very simple. But I tell you what, that's bigger than just how you and your spouse relate to each other. It affects the atmosphere of your home, and it affects your children. A wife who holds out on her husband is not going to create a great home environment for kids. Same is true of a husband. A husband who will not unconditionally love and respect and meet the needs of his wife is going to be a poor father. And he can say he loves his kids, and he can go on daddy dates and all the things that you do and buy them things and take pictures of them and all this kind of stuff. But if you're not loving their mother, the kids, they want that, actually. They need that. And they will get frustrated or angry over time if they don't see that kind of a relationship. You can't skip the marriage to get to good parenting. You really have to work on the marriage. Parental absence. Paul's instruction to parents. I know this is super simple, but it's so simple. It's still biblical there. It's right here. He assumes that you're there doing it. How do you raise up children if you're not around? So he's assuming here parental presence and involvement. If dad is not there, then dad is not raising up the children. If mom is not there, mom is not raising up the children. Someone else is. Mom and dad aren't doing it. So if fathers focuses on both sets of parents, Paul here is assuming that mom and dad are there to raise up their children. Does that make sense? It's simple, but parental presence. When you are absent, absent parents over time will frustrate children because they want you there. They need you. Repeated aggravation. Emphasis on repeated. That don't provoke, whichever word it is, in Ephesians or Colossians, they're different words, but both of those words are given in a present tense form, which means it's not talking about a one-time thing that happened. It's talking about things that happen over time. If you are continually not there, isn't that what divorce does, by the way? It makes you continually not there. If you're continually not there, if you continually do any of these things, it's that process of continuing to do it and not correcting that, that over time will cause bitterness and anger in a child's heart. It's not a one-time thing. If a kid says, well, my dad promised this, and then he didn't do it, and I've been bitter, it's usually not a one-time thing that they're upset about. It's usually that it's a tendency your mom and dad have. You kind of, over time, you frustrate them. Because they keep getting their hopes up, and then you fall down. They keep, and again. Or you keep going to church, and the pastor's, and you never do it. And it's just over time. It's this process. Don't push them to anger. Don't let bitterness build up. Parental neglect. That idea of bringing up, that word means child training, or nurturing, rather. This nurturing the child's genuine needs. What are a child's needs? Well, I think it's helpful to look at Luke 2:52 when Jesus was raised. It says he grew in wisdom, that's educational, intellectual development. He grew in wisdom, stature, that's physical development. I mean, you do need to feed your kids proper nutrition and give them the clothing that they need and proper activities. And that is an important part of parenting, understanding your children's needs. Wisdom, stature, favor with God, that's their spiritual life. Learning how to relate to God, how to foster that relationship with God and the Word of God. But also favor with men. Learning how to have good attitudes and interaction with people. We're trying to work with our kids right now. Talk to people. If any of my kids ever come up and talk to you, we either told them to do it, like talk to you, or we told them to talk to some people, figure that out, whoever you want to talk to, and then let us know who it was. Or they actually did it spontaneously. Yesterday at prayer meeting, I think my son Josh walked up and said something to Sam. That was one I didn't tell him to. He just did it, and it shocked me. Oh, it's really good. I like seeing my kids talk to older people in the church. But that doesn't happen automatically. We get frustrated with our teens when they don't do it, but did we ever teach them? Make it a point of instruction. But favor with man. Social development. Sending them off to school is not automatic social development. They may socially develop, but in the wrong way. You have to work on this. So the bottom line is understand your kids' needs and meet those needs, whatever that is. Not always just reading the Bible. Permissiveness. I get this from that. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition. That word, nurture, that comes after bring up. These words kind of overlap a little bit, but it means something like this. Discipline or child training, teaching appropriate behavior for adult life, like that's the goal, through, in their present childhood, rules and consequences. That's kind of the idea. You're arranging their life using rules, guidelines, barriers. And there are consequences, positive consequences for good behavior, bad consequences for bad behavior, that you are actively working and putting into their life experience so that you bring them to the place that they're ready to be an adult. This does not automatically happen. You have to establish the rules. You have to have consequences. You have to have good ones and bad ones. There needs to be a plan, a way of doing that. That next word, nurture and admonition, I put silence here. It's the opposite. This admonition is more informing their mind, giving them warnings, talking to your children along the way about things. Not just giving rules, not just giving consequences, but also having meaningful conversations where you're saying, no, that's not good, and here's why that's not good. Or, that's good, and here's why. It's more the vocal aspect of child training. And you kind of need both. If all they know is they get spanked every time they do something wrong, but there's never a conversation, that's not the full picture. But if all you ever do is talk to your kids and explain everything all the time, but you never give just basic consequences, that also is not good. You need both. And you tailor this then to their needs that you understand. And so you're raising them, understanding their needs, and we're going to talk more about these things. Permissiveness, I've said it that way because that's the opposite of actually having rules, barriers, guidelines, and consequences. permissiveness over time, it may make a kid happy in the moment, but over time it will frustrate them. Because when they get into life and they find that life doesn't give them permission to do whatever they want, bosses don't, schools don't, that gets frustrating. Even though mom and dad say they love them and let them do anything they want, buy anything, they, and just say yes and yes and don't have that's nice. It keeps things happy for maybe the day at your house. But when they start facing life, that's very frustrating because they don't know how to deal with life then. So you have to do it at home. Silence, not explaining things, that will eventually frustrate them. And they start realizing, Mom and Dad never talked to me about this. It's frustrating. Disregard for Christ as Lord by Mom and Dad. Bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Mom and Dad, yes, parents need to teach their children. You obey us in the Lord. But, yeah, Mom and Dad need to raise their children in the Lord, too. Kids need to see in tangible ways, without mistake, that Mom and Dad are not the buck stop. Jesus is. They need to see that God, whatever God says, Mom and Dad do. Dad does this because Jesus says so. Mom makes me do that because she said it's in the Bible somewhere. That's the idea. Does that make sense? You do what you do because Jesus says so. Submitted parents to Jesus, especially the fathers who are submitted to Jesus as the head. Very important. When kids see parents making independent choices that disregard the clear commands of Jesus, you're going to eventually frustrate your kids. That is a problem. They should obey you in the Lord, but you need to lead them in the Lord. All of this needs to be under the obedience to the Lord. Failure to understand your child's purpose. This idea of raising up your children, it's also talked about in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6. The way that they should go. And this way, we're going to talk more about this later. But children need guidance to discover and prepare for the way that they should go. This refers, yes, to the general will of God for any person. There, you know, every child should obey their parents. Every child should serve God, pray, whatever. But there's also this reality that every child is unique, an individual, as a personality, as a created being. And that doesn't just magically happen. The idea of letting your child grow, throwing in them into all kinds of experiences, like paying for this and that, and going, sending them out to that, sending them out to that, sending them out. And then when they're 18, saying, so what do you want to do with your life? I think I'll do general studies, or I'll be an engineer next year. No, I'm going to be a lawyer. I think that's more my stuff. They shouldn't be trying to figure that all out when they're 18. They should have a basic, even more than basic idea of who they are and what they're supposed to be doing with their life as an individual. And Mom and Dad don't need to sit down and prescribe that to them. You are going to be an astronaut, son. I see it in you. You're going to be a preacher. No, that's not how it works. There's a mutual conversation that goes on. You throw things out to your kids. This should be a conversation that's been happening since they can remember talking to you. By the time they turn 18, there should be a pretty good idea of what the way is for them to go. Because of this dynamic conversation, guiding, you're working to understand their needs, they're giving you their heart, and this goes back and forth. By the time they should know, it's probably before 18 when they should start knowing. Because Mom and Dad were just a part of this exploring process with them. Kids get very frustrated when they get 18, 19, 20, especially when they happen to answer everybody's questions, what am I supposed to, and they don't have a clue. That is very frustrating. And you know, they probably asked, like you have asked, why didn't Mom and Dad help me figure this out? You know, I'm so confused, I don't know what to do. And Mom and Dad are, I'll pray for you to decide the Lord's. Thanks, can we talk about it? What do you think? It should be a conversation that should be going on and on. So parents need to nurture. If you're going to understand their needs, it certainly means you're going to understand them and help them. Know what that way is for them. Failure to understand your child's purpose is the opposite of that. Psalm 127:4, they're like arrows in the hand of a mighty man. who shoots the arrows? Do arrows just jump out and go where they want to go? You hold an arrow out in your hand and say, whichever way the wind blows. Oh, no. That's not how it works. Parents, shoot that arrow. There should be some intentionality about that. We have to think about it. It's biblical. But it's not us just kind of deciding for them. It's a dynamic process of understanding and having this conversation. Unresolved anger and bitterness, again, this goes without saying, but anyone in a close relationship with someone who is angry and bitter causes the people that they're close to risk becoming what? Angry and bitter. The Bible says don't make friends with an angry person or a bitter person. Right? Why? Lest you be like him and learn his ways. There's no closer relationship than the home. And if mom and dad are bitter about something and they have unresolved anger in their life, that, in a very straightforward way, will probably cause your kids to become angry and bitter kids. Even though they never went through what you went through, they're still upset about it. And they have the same chip on their shoulder, or more. So simple, I know. Esau, right? Esau leads to the next one, favoritism. Remember Isaac and Rebekah? They showed favoritism. Rebekah liked Jacob. Isaac liked Esau. Favoritism was at play. How did Esau turn out? Hebrews chapter 12 tells us. He was bitter. And he was worldly. Why? Because his mom and dad showed favoritism, and he developed bitterness over time. It was the result of favoritism. We cannot show favoritism towards our children. It's so hard. We got five kids at the table, and when one wants to show me their muscles, the other one wants to show me their muscles. And how do you look at both of them and say, you are so strong? Oh, and you are so strong too, but yo, you are so strong. You are both so strong. You are as strong as your older brother. You don't want to say, you're older, so you're stronger. You just have to constantly work at making sure there's enough things that are going on in life. You don't want to show favoritism. And you have to work this out because it will create frustration, especially when you have four boys in the house. If we have problems, I don't want it to be favoritism. They all need to understand they are amazing individuals. Sinners, but we love them all. Sometimes they'll say, do you love me more? And I'll say, all I can say is I love you more than I could ever say. And I don't love any other child more than you. I can say that. I can say that to all of them. I don't love any other child more than you. And then they will compete. Do you love me more than I love you? And then, oh, I love you to the sun. Oh, I love you to the solar system. Oh, I love you. I love you there and back. Oh, I love you to infinity. It gets kind of out of control. Yeah, we just love you. There's no favor. And we have to be careful. Sometimes the kid that's more like me, I like better. And the one that's more like Sarah, I love Sarah. I just mean, you know what I'm saying? You know how this works? And they can pick that up over time. It's not a one-time thing that's going to mess them up. It's just, if this goes on and on over time, and you don't correct it, it will cause frustration. Hurtful words, right in the context, before the marriage advice given in Ephesians 5, we need to learn to speak, if anyone, to our children, with words that build up and don't tear down. You can say the right thing in the wrong way. Are you overwhelmed yet? I'll tell my dad, because I glamorize him a lot, I know. He could be sarcastic sometimes. He'd make jokes about my sister's nose or about my Adam's apple or things like this. That was not helpful, I can tell you that. It was not helpful. And I have to work at that. And I remember my mom saying, oh, don't pick on them, honey. And he wasn't meaning anything bad by it. He was not. He was just trying to show love. I know it. It's still hard to deal with as a kid. You know what I'm saying? And we have to make sure, that may not be your problem, I have to work at that. But for me, that's something I have to work at because I experienced it. And I have a great, wonderful dad. I'm just trying to be open with us. Hurtful words. Make sure that you're not sarcastic, calling names, and so forth. Hypocrisy and inconsistency. Matthew 7 says, if you're going to correct, which is a part of parenting, another person's problems, That does include your kids. You really have to be willing to fix your own first. And if that isn't true in parenting, I don't know where it is. It's very true, right? Forget about our family here at Faith. Let's start with our kids and make sure that what we see in them, we correct, but after we've corrected ourselves. That's powerful. And I will tell my dad in a good way, he did do that. He did grow, and he admitted his needs. And I saw that, and that helped me get through some of the things that were hard to deal with. And we all have those things as dads and moms. Any quick thoughts? We're going to talk about these more in detail later. I'm resisting that urge right now, because any of them can be a two-session series. Anyone hit by any of this? A little bit, yeah. And this is where it's so important to be biblical, because if our parents did this and it hurt us, and they did this and it was good, if we just react to that and fix and correct, we're only still hitting part of the issue. It's like a pendulum. So we kind of have to clear the deck and just say, but what does the Bible say? And be very objective about that. Otherwise, we end up kind of just correcting our parents' problems with our kids. That's only a partial solution. Does that make sense? Be objective and thorough that way. You will cover those things, but you're more thorough, more honest. And here's another problem. Understanding the way that our kids should go, you know what we do? We try to live out through our kids what we wanted for ourselves. And we kind of might, maybe in favoritism, we'll pick one kid that's most like us, we think, and we want to see them do better than I did. And what I really mean by that, wrongly, is I want them to be me all over again, better than me. That's wrong. That will frustrate a kid if they are treated and somehow have to become like you, only better, because they're not me. They never will be me. They are them, period. And I have to understand that. None of my kids are going to turn out to be like me. They're going to turn out to be like who they're supposed to be, and I cannot force myself vicariously. Oh, I wanted to have karate lessons when I was a kid, so I'm sure my kid does too, right? Well, maybe they don't. It's fine. Maybe they don't, because they're not me, and I can't just vicariously relive my childhood through them. Does that make sense, too? Understanding their needs. We'll take more time on these things one by one later, so that'll be good.